a living shield around them. And there was a stain on the planks, shining and dark. Her stomach rose.
"You planned to lie to me about it,"
she seethed.
"But how would you explain that?"
A shrug. Lorkin took up the pole and moved with fluid grace to the side of the barge, where he pushed them away from an approaching sandbank. He had killed that man.
I swore to him he'd be set free.
"You swore it, not me."
Her fingers curled into fists.
And that thing,
that stone wrapped in that bit of cloth inside her jacket, began to stir. Lorkin stilled, the pole gripped tight in his hands.
"What is that?"
he said too softly. She held her ground. Like hell she'd back down from him. Like hell she'd allow him to intimidate her, overrule her, kill people so they could escape.
"What is that?"
She refused to speak, to even touch the lump in her pocket. It thrummed and grumbled, a beast opening an eye. But she didn't dare to reach out, to so much as acknowledge that strange otherworldly presence. Lorkin's eyes widened slightly. Then he was setting down the pole and stalking across the deck and into the cabin. She lingered by the edge, unsure whether to follow, or perhaps jump into the water and swim to shore, but there was a thud of metal on metal, as if something was being cracked open, and then Lorkin's roar shook the boat, the river, the trees. Long-legged river birds hauled themselves into flight. Then Lorkin flung open the door, so violently it nearly ripped off its hinges, and hurled what looked to be the shards of a broken amulet into the river. Or he tried to. Lorkin threw it hard enough that it cleared the river entirely and slammed into a tree, gouging out a chunk of wood. He whirled, and Elide's anger stumbled a step at the blistering wrath twisting his features. He prowled for her, grabbing the pole as if to keep from throttling her, and said,
"What is it that you carry?"
And the demand, the violence and entitlement and arrogance, had her seeing red too. So Elide said with quiet venom,
"Why don't you just slit my throat and find out for yourself?"
Lorkin's nostrils flared. "If you have a problem with my killing someone who reeked of itching to betray us the moment he got the chance, then you are going to love your queen." For a while now, he'd hinted that he knew of her. That he knew of her well enough to call her horrible things, but
"What do you mean?"
Lorkin, gods above, looked as if his temper had at last slipped its leash, as he said,
"Selena Sardothian is a 19-year-old assassin who calls herself the best in the world."
A snort.
"She killed and reveled and shopped her way through life and never once apologized for it. She gloried in it. And then this spring, one of my sentinels, Prince Rowan Whitethorn, was tasked to deal with her when she washed up on Wendland's shores. Turns out he fell in love with her instead, and she with him. Turns out, whatever they were doing up in the Cambrian Mountains got her to stop calling herself Selena and start going by her true name again." A brutal smile. "Aelin Galathinius." Elide could barely feel her body.
"What?"
was about the only word she could manage.
"Your fire-breathing queen? She's a god's damned assassin. Trained to be a killer from the moment your mother died defending her. Trained to be no better than the man who butchered your mother and your royal family."
Elide shook her head, her hands slackening.
"What?"
she said again. Lorkin laughed mirthlessly.
"While you were locked in that tower for 10 years, she was indulging in the riches of Rifthold, spoiled and coddled by her master, the King of the Assassins, whom she murdered in cold blood this spring. So you'll find that your long-lost savior is little better than I am. You'll find that she would have killed that man the same as I did, and would have as little tolerance for your whining as I do.
Aelin, an assassin. Aelin, the same person she'd been tasked to give the stone to. You knew, she said. This whole time we've been together, you knew I was looking for the same person.
I told you that to find one would be to find the other.
You knew and you didn't tell me. Why?
You still haven't told me your secrets. I don't see why I should tell all of mine either.
She squeezed her eyes shut, trying to ignore the dark stain on the wood, trying to soothe the sting of his words and seal the hole that had opened beneath her feet. What had been in that amulet? Why had he roared and...
Your little queen, Lorcan sneered, is a murderer and a thief and a liar. So if you're going to call me such things, then be prepared to fling them at her, too.
Her skin was too tight, her bones too brittle to bear the anger that took control. She scrambled for the right words to hurt him, wound him, as if they were fistfuls of rocks that she could hurl at Lorcan's head. Elide hissed. I was wrong. I said you and I were the same, that we had no family, no friends. But I have none because land and circumstance separate me from them. You have none because no one can stomach being around you. She tried, and succeeded, if the ire that rippled in his eyes was any indication, to look down her nose at him, even with him towering over her. And you know what is the biggest lie you tell everyone, Lorcan? It's that you prefer it that way. But what I hear, when you rant about my bitch queen, all I hear are the words of someone who is deeply, deeply jealous and lonely and pathetic. All I hear are the words of someone who saw Aelin and Prince Rowan fall in love and resented them for their happiness, because you are so unhappy.
She couldn't stop the words once they started flinging out.
So call Aelin a murderer and a thief and a liar. Call her a bitch queen and a fire breather. But forgive me if I take it upon myself to be the judge of those things when I meet her, which I will do.
She pointed to the muddy gray river flowing around them.
I'm going to Eelwey. Take me ashore, and I'll wash my hands of you as easily as you washed the blood of that man off yours.
Lorcan looked her over, teeth bared enough to show those slightly elongated canines. But she didn't care about his fey heritage, or his age, or his ability to kill. After a moment, he went back to pushing the pole against the river bottom, not to bring them to shore, but to guide them along.
Did you not hear what I said? Take me to shore.
No. Her rage overcame any sort of common sense, any warning from Aneth as she stormed over to him.
No?
He let the pole drag in the water and turned his face to her. No emotion. Not even anger lingered there. The river veered southward 2 miles ago. From the map in the cabin, we can take it straight south, then find the fastest route to Bunjali. She wiped the rain from her dripping brow, as Lorcan brought his face close enough for them to share breath. Turns out, I now have business with Aelin Galathinius, too. Congratulations, lady. You just got yourself a guide to Eelwey.
A cold, killing light was in his eyes, and she wondered what the hell he'd roared about. But those eyes dipped to her mouth,
clamped tight in her rage. And a part of her that had nothing to do with fear went still at the attention, even as other parts went a bit molten. Lorkin's eyes at last found her own, and his voice was a midnight growl as he said,
"As far as anyone's concerned, you're still my wife."
Elide didn't object. Even as she walked back into the cabin, his insufferable magic helping with her limp, and slammed the door shut so hard the glass rattled. Storm clouds drifted away, to reveal a star-flecked night and a moon bright enough for Lorkin to navigate the narrow, sleepy river. He steered them hour after hour, contemplating precisely how he was going to murder Aelin Galathinius without Elide or Whitethorn getting in the way, and then how he was going to slice up her corpse and feed it to the crows. She had lied to him. She and Whitethorn had tricked him that day the prince had handed over the word key. There had been nothing inside the amulet but one of those rings, an utterly useless wordstone ring wrapped in a bit of parchment. And on it was written in a feminine scrawl, "Here's hoping you discover more creative terms than bitch to call me when you find this. With all my love, A.A.G." He'd kill her. Slowly, creatively. He'd been forced to swear a blood promise that Mala's ring truly offered him immunity from the Vogue when it was worn. He hadn't thought to demand that their word key was real, too. And Elide. What Elide carried. What had made him realize it. He'd think about that later. Contemplate what to do with the Lady of Peranth later. His only consolation was that he'd stolen Mala's ring back. But the little bitch still had the key. And if Elide needed to go to Aelin anyway, oh, he'd find Aelin for Elide. And he'd make the Queen of Terrasen crawl before the end of it. Chapter 44. The world began and ended in fire. A sea of fire with no room for air, for sound beyond the cascading molten earth. The true heart of fire, the tool of creation and destruction. And she was drowning in it. Its weight smothered her as she thrashed, seeking a surface or a bottom to push off from. Neither existed. As it flooded her throat, surging into her body and melting her apart, she began screaming noiselessly, begging it to halt.
Aelin.
The name, roared into the core of flame at the heart of the world, was a beacon, a summons. She'd been born waiting to hear that voice, had blindly sought it her whole life, would follow it unto the ending of all things.
Aelin!
Aelin bowed off the bed, flame in her mouth, her throat, her eyes. Real flame. Golds and blues wove among simmering swaths of red. Real flame, erupting from her, the sheets scorched, the room and the rest of the bed spared from incineration, the ship in the middle of the sea spared from incineration, by an uncompromising, unbreakable wall of air. Hands wrapped in ice squeezed her shoulders, and through the flame, Rowan's snarling face appeared, commanding her to breathe. She took a breath. More flame rushed down her throat. There was no tether, no leash to bring her magic to heal. Oh gods, she couldn't even feel a burnout threatening nearby. There was nothing but this flame. Rowan gripped her face in his hands, steam rippling where his ice and wind met her fire.
You are its master. You control it. Your fear grants it the right to take over.
Her body arced off the mattress again, utterly naked. She must have burned her clothes, Rowan's favorite shirt. Her flames burned wilder. He gripped her hard, forcing her to meet his eyes as he snarled,
I see you. I see every part of you, and I am not afraid.
I will not be afraid.
A line in the burning brightness.
My name is Aelin Ashriver Galathinius, and I will not be afraid.
As surely as if she grabbed it in her hand, the leash appeared. Darkness flowed in, blessed and calm where that burning pit of flame had raged. She swallowed once, twice.
Rowan.
His eyes gleamed with near animal brightness, scanning every inch of her. His heartbeat was rampant, thundering, panicked.
Rowan,
she repeated. Still, he did not move, did not stop staring at her, searching for signs of harm. Something in her own chest shifted at his panic. Aelin grasped his shoulder, digging in her nails at the violence rampant on every line of his body, as if he'd loosed whatever leashes he kept on himself, in anticipation of fighting to keep her in this body, and not some goddess or worse.
Calm down. Now.
He did no such thing. Rolling her eyes, she tugged his hands from her face to lean over and throw the sheets off them. I am fine, she said, enunciating each word.
You saw to that.
Now get me some water. I'm thirsty. A basic, easy command. To serve, in the way he'd explained that females liked to be needed. To fulfill some part of them that wanted to fuss and dote. To drag him back up to that level of civilization and reason. Rowan's face was still harsh with feral wrath, and the insidious terror running beneath it. So Aelin leaned in, nipped his jaw, making sure her canines scratched, and said onto his skin,
If you don't start acting like a prince, you can sleep on the floor.
Rowan pulled back, his savage face not wholly of this world. But slowly, as if the words sank in, his features softened. He was still looking pissy, but not so near killing that invisible threat against her, as he leaned in, nipping her jaw in return, and said into her ear,
I'm going to make you regret using such threats, princess.
Oh, gods. Her toes curled, but she gave him a simpering smile as he rose to his feet, every muscle in his naked body rippling with the movement, and watched him pad with feline grace to the washstand and ewer atop it. The bastard had the nerve to look her over as he lifted the jug, and then give her a satisfied male smile as he poured a glass right to the brim, halting with expert precision. She debated sending a lick of flame to burn his bare ass as he set down the jug with emphasized care and calm, and then stalked back to the bed, eyes on her every step of the way, and set the water on the small table beside it. Aelin rose on surprisingly steady knees and faced him. Only the creaking of the ship and hissing of the waves against it filled the room.
What was that?
She asked quietly. His eyes shuddered.
It was me losing control.
Why?
He glanced at the porthole and moon-kissed sea beyond, so rare for him to avoid her stare. Why? She pushed. Rowan at last met her gaze.
I didn't know if she'd taken you again.
No matter that the word key now lay beside the bed and not around her neck.
Even when I realized you were just in the magic's thrall, I still... The magic took you away. It's been a long time since I wasn't certain. Since I didn't know how to get you back.
He bared his teeth, loosing a jagged breath. The wrath now directed inward.
Before you call me a territorial fey bastard, allow me to apologize and explain that it is very difficult.
Rowan.
He stilled. She crossed the small lingering distance between them, every step like the answer to some question she'd asked from the moment her soul had sparked into existence.
You are not human. I do not expect you to be.
He almost seemed to recoil, but she put a hand on his bare chest, over his heart. It still thundered beneath her palm. She said softly, feeling that heart beneath her hand,
I do not care if you are fey or human, if you are Vog or a goddamned skinwalker. You are what you are. And what I want, what I need, Rowan, is someone who does not apologize for it, for who they are.
You have never once done so. She leaned forward to kiss the bare skin where her hand had been.
Please don't start doing it now.
Yes, sometimes you piss me the hell off with that fey territorial nonsense, but
I heard your voice.
It woke me up. It led me out of that place. He bowed his head until his brow leaned against hers.
I wish I had more to offer you. During this war, and beyond it.
She slid her arms around his bare waist.
You offer me more than I ever hoped for.
He seemed to object, but she said,
And I figured, since both Darrow and Rolf informed me I needed to sell my hand in marriage for the sake of this war, I should do the opposite.
A snort.
Typical. But if Terrison needs...
Here's the way I see it, she said, pulling back to examine his harsh face. We do not have the luxury of time, and a marriage to a foreign kingdom, with its contracts and distances, plus the months it takes to raise and send an army, we do not have that time. We only have now. And what I don't need is a husband who will try to get into a pissing contest with me, or who I'll have to cloister somewhere for his own safety, or who will hide in a corner when I wake up with flames all around me.
She kissed his tattooed chest again, right over that mighty, thundering heart.
This, Rowan, this is all I need. Just this.
The reverberations of his deep, rattling breath echoed into her cheek. And he stroked a hand over her hair, along her bare back.
Lower.
A court that can change the world.
She kissed the corner of his mouth.
We'll find a way. Together.
The words he'd given her once. The words that had begun the healing of her shattered heart. And his own.
Did I hurt?
Her words were a rasp.
No.
He brushed a thumb over his cheekbone.
No, you didn't hurt me. Or anything else.
Something in her chest caved in, and Rowan gathered her in his arms as she buried her face in his neck. His calloused hands caressed her back, over each and every scar and the tattoos he'd inked on her.
If we survive this war,
she murmured after a while, onto his bare chest.
You and I are going to have to learn how to relax, to sleep through the night.
If we survive this war, princess,
he said, running a finger down the groove of her spine.
I'll be happy to do anything you want, even learn how to relax.
And if we never have a moment's peace, even after we get the lock, the keys, and send Erewhon back to his hellhole realm?
The amusement faded, replaced by something more intent, as his fingers stilled on her back.
Even if we have threats of war every other day.
Even if we have to host fussy emissaries. Even if we have to visit god-awful kingdoms and play nice.
I'll be happy to do it. If you're at my side.
Her lips trembled. Ugh, you. Since when did you learn to make such pretty speeches?
I just needed the right excuse to learn,
he said, kissing her cheek.
Her body went taut and molten in all the right places as his mouth moved lower, pressing gentle, biting kisses to her jaw, her ear, her neck. She dug her fingers into his back, baring her throat as his canines scratched lightly.
I love you.
Rowan breathed onto her skin and flicked his tongue over the spot where his canines had scratched.
I'd walk into the burning heart of hell itself to find you.
He almost had mere minutes ago, she wanted to say. But Aelin only arched her back a bit more, a small, needy noise coming out of her. This? Him? Would it ever stop? The wanting? The need to not only be near him, but to have him so deep in her she felt their souls twining, their magic dancing. The tether that had led her out of that burning core of madness and destruction.
Please,
she breathed, nails digging into his lower back in emphasis. Rowan's low groan was his only answer as he hoisted her up. She wrapped her legs around his waist, letting him carry her not to the bed, but to the wall, and the sensation of the cool wood against her back, compared to the heat and hardness of him pushing into her front. Aelin panted through her gritted teeth as he again dragged his tongue over that spot on her neck.
Please.
She felt his smile against her skin as Rowan thrust into her in a long, powerful stroke and bit down on her neck. Acclaiming, mighty and true, that she understood he so desperately needed, that she needed. And with his teeth in her, his body in her, she was going to combust. She was going to splinter apart from the overwhelming need. Rowan's hips began to move, setting a lazy, smooth pace as he kept his canines buried in her neck. As his tongue slid along the twin points of pleasure edged with finest pain, as he tasted her very essence as if it were wine, he laughed, low and wicked, as Release had her biting down on his shoulder to keep from screaming loud enough to wake the creatures sleeping on the bottom of the sea. When Rowan finally drew his mouth away from her neck, his magic healing the small holes he'd left, his hands tightened on her thighs, pinning her to the wall as he moved deeper, harder. Aelin only dragged her fingers through his hair as she gave him a savage kiss and tasted her own blood on his tongue. She whispered onto his mouth,
I'll always find a way back to you.
This time, when Aelin went over the edge, Rowan plummeted with her. Manon Blackbeak awoke. There had been no sound, no smell, no hint of why she'd awoken. But those predatory instincts had sensed something amiss and sent her tumbling from sleep. She blinked as she sat up, her wound now a dull ache, and found her head clear of whatever that haze had been. The room was near black, save for the moonlight that trickled through the porthole to illuminate her cramped cabin. How long had she been lost to sleep in hideous melancholy? She listened carefully to the creaking of the ship. A faint grumbling sounded from above. Abraxos. Still alive. Still sleeping, if she knew that drowsy, wheezing grumble. She tested the manacles on her wrists, lifting them to peer at the lock. A clever sort of contraption, the chains thick and anchored soundly into the wall. Her ankles were no better. She couldn't remember the last time she'd been in chains. How had Elite endured it for a decade? Maybe she'd find the girl once she got out of here. She doubted the Havilyard King had any news of the 13 anyway.
She'd sneak onto Abraxos's back, fly for the coast, and find a lead before tracking down her coven. And then, she didn't know what she'd do. But it was better than lying here like a worm in the sun, letting whatever despair had seized control these days or weeks wreak havoc on her. But as if she'd summoned him, the door opened. Dorian stood there, a candle in his... not a candle. Pure flame wreathed his fingers. It set his sapphire eyes glowing bright as he found her lucid.
Was it you who sent that ripple of power?
No, though it didn't take much guessing to suspect who it had been then. Witches don't have magic like that. He angled his head, his blue-black hair stained gold by his flames.
But you're long-lived.
She nodded, and he took that as an invitation to slide into his usual chair. It's called the Yielding, she said, a chill brushing down her spine. The bit of magic we have. We usually cannot summon or wield, but for one moment in a witch's life, she can summon great power to unleash upon her enemies. The cost is that she is incinerated in the blast, her body yielded to the darkness. In the witch wars, witches on both sides made yieldings during every battle and skirmish.
It's suicide, to blow yourself into smithereens and take enemies with you.
It is, and it's not pretty. As the Iron Teeth Witch yields life to the darkness, its power fills her and unleashes from her in an ebony wave. A manifestation of what lies in our souls.
Have you seen it done?
Once. By a scared young witch who knew she wouldn't win glory any other way. Only she took out half our Iron Teeth force as well as the Kraken's. Her mind snagged on the word. Kraken's. Her people. Not her people. She was a goddamned blackbeak.
Will the Iron Teeth use it on us?
If you're facing lower-level covens, yes. Older covens are too arrogant, too skilled to choose the Yielding instead of fighting their way out. But younger, weaker covens get spooked, or wish to win valor through sacrifice.
It's murder.
It's war. War is sanctioned murder, no matter what side you're on. Ire flickered on his face, and she asked, "Have you ever killed a man?" He opened his mouth to say no, but the light in his hand died. He had, when he'd been collared, she guessed. The Volg inside him had done it, multiple times, and not cleanly. "Remember what they made you do," Manon said, "when you face them again."
"I doubt I'll ever forget it, witchling."
He stood, heading for the door. Manon said, "These chains are rubbing my skin raw. Surely you've some sympathy for chained things." Dorian paused. She lifted her hands, displaying the chains. "I'll give my word not to do any harm."
"It's not my call. Now that you're talking again, maybe telling Aelin what she's been pushing you about will get you on her good side."
Manon had no idea what the Queen had been demanding of her. None. "The longer I stay in here, princeling, the more likely I am to do something stupid when you release me. Let me at least feel the wind on my face."
"You've got a window. Go stand in front of it."
Part of her sat up straight at the harshness, the maleness in that tone, in the set of those broad shoulders. She purred. "If I had been asleep, would you have lingered to stare at me for a while?"
I see amusement gleamed there.
Would you have objected?
And perhaps she was reckless and wild and still a bit stupid from blood loss. But she said, if you plan to sneak in here in the darkest hours of the night, you should at least have the decency to ensure I'd get something out of it. His lips twitched, though the smile was cold and sensuous, in a way that made her wonder what playing with a king blessed with raw magic might be like. If he'd make her beg for the first time in her long life. He looked capable of it, perhaps willing to let a little cruelty into the bedroom. Her blood thrummed.
As tempting as seeing you naked and chained might be.
A soft lover's laugh. I don't think you'd enjoy the loss of control. And you've been with so many women to be able to judge a witch's wants so easily. That smile turned lazy.
A gentleman never tells.
How many? He was only 20, though he was a prince, now a king. Women had likely been falling over themselves for him since his voice had deepened.
How many men have you been with?
He countered. She smirked. Enough to know how to handle the needs of mortal princelings, to know what will make you beg. Never mind that she was contemplating the opposite. He drifted across the room, past the range of her chains, right into her own breathing space. He leaned over her, nearly nose to nose, nothing at all amused in his face. In the cut of his cruel, beautiful mouth, as he said,
I don't think you can handle the sort of things I need, witchling. And I am never begging for anything again in my life.
And then he left. Manon stared after him, a hiss of rage slipping from her own lips. At the opportunity she hadn't taken to grab him, hold him hostage, and demand her freedom. At the arrogance in his assumption. At the heat that had gathered in her core and now throbbed insistently enough that she clamped her legs together. She had never been denied. Men had fallen to pieces, sometimes literally, to crawl into her bed. And she didn't know what she would have done if he had taken up her offer. If she would have decided to learn what the king could do exactly with that beautiful mouth and toned body. A distraction. And an excuse to loathe herself even more, she supposed. She was still seething at the door, when it opened again. Dorian leaned against the aged wood, his eyes still glazed in a way she couldn't tell was lust or hatred or both. He slid the lock shut without looking at it. Her heartbeat picked up, her entire immortal focus narrowed to his steady, unhurried breathing, the unreadable face. His voice was rough as he said,
I won't waste my breath telling you how stupid it would be to try to take me hostage.
I won't waste mine telling you to take only what I offer you and nothing more. Her ears strained to listen, but even his damned heart was a solid beat. Not a whiff of fear. He said,
I need to hear you say yes.
His eyes flicked to the chains. It took her a moment to comprehend, but she let out a low laugh. So considerate, princeling. But yes, I do this of my own free will. It can be our little secret. She was nothing and no one now anyway. Sharing a bed with her enemy was nothing compared to the Crocken blood that flowed in her veins. She began to unbutton the white shirt she'd been wearing for gods knew how long. But he growled,
I'll do it myself.
Like hell he would. She touched the second button.
invisible hands wrapped around her wrists, tightly enough that she dropped the shirt. Dorian prowled to her.
I said that I'd do it.
Manon took in each inch of him as he towered over her, and a shiver of pleasure rippled through her.
I suggest you listen.
The pure male arrogance in that statement alone. You're courting death if you... Dorian lowered his mouth to hers. It was a feather-light graze, barely a whisper of touch. Intent. Calculated. And so unexpected, she arched into it a bit. He kissed the corner of her mouth with the same silken gentleness. Then the other corner. She didn't move. Didn't even breathe. Like every part of her body was waiting to see what he'd do next. But Dorian pulled back, studying her eyes with a cool detachment. Whatever he beheld there made him step away. The invisible fingers on her wrists vanished. The door unlatched. And that cocky grin returned as Dorian shrugged with one shoulder and said,
Maybe another night, witchling.
Manon almost bellowed as he slipped out the door, and didn't return. Chapter 45. The witch was lucid, but pissed off. Adian had the pleasure of serving her breakfast, and tried not to note the lingering scent of female arousal in the cabin, or that Dorian's scent was entwined among it. The king was entitled to move on, Adian reminded himself, hours later, as he scanned the late afternoon horizon from the ship's helm. In the quiet hours of his watches, he'd often mulled over the thorough scolding Lysandra had given him regarding his anger and cruelty toward the king. And maybe, just maybe, Lysandra was right. And maybe the fact that Dorian could even look at a female with interest after seeing Sorsha beheaded was a miracle. But the witch? That was what he wanted to tangle with? He asked Lysandra as much when she joined him 30 minutes later, still soaked from patrolling the waters ahead. All clear. Lysandra finger-combed her inky sheet of hair, frowning. I had clients who lost their wives or lovers and wanted something to distract them. Wanted the opposite of who their beloved had been. Perhaps to make the act feel wholly separate. What he went through would change anyone. He might very well find himself now attracted to dangerous things.
He already had a penchant for them, Adian murmured,
glancing to where Aelin and Rowan sparred on the main deck, sweat gleaming golden, as the afternoon light shifted toward evening. Dorian perched on the nearby steps up to the quarter-deck, Damaris braced over his knees, half awake in the heat. Part of Adian smiled, knowing Rowan would no doubt kick his ass for it.
Aelin was dangerous, but still human, Lysandra observed. Manon is not. He probably likes it that way, and I'd stay out of it if I were you.
I'm not getting in the middle of that disaster, don't worry. Though I wouldn't let those iron teeth near my favorite part if I were him.
Adian grinned, as Lysandra tipped her head back and laughed. He added,
Besides, watching Aelin and the witch go head-to-head this morning about Elide was enough to remind me to stay the hell back and enjoy the spectacle.
Little Elide Locken, alive and out there searching for them. Gods above. The look on Aelin's face when Manon had revealed detail after detail, what Vernon had tried to do to the girl. There would be a reckoning in Peranth for that. Adian himself would hang the Lord by his intestines, while Vernon was still breathing. And then he'd get started on paying Vernon back for the 10 years of horror Elide had endured. For the maimed foot,
and the chains. For the tower. Locked in a tower. In a city he'd visited so many times in the past 10 years, he had no count. She might have even watched the Bane from that spire as they came and left the city. Possibly thinking he'd forgotten or didn't care about her either. And now she was out there. Alone. With a permanently mangled foot, no training and no weapons. If she was lucky, perhaps she'd run into the Bane first. His commanders would recognize her name. Protect her. That is, if she dared to reveal herself at all. It had taken all his self-control not to strangle Manon for abandoning the girl in the middle of Oakwald, for not flying her right to Terrasen. Aelin, however, hadn't bothered with restraint. 2 strikes, both so fast even the wingleader didn't see them. A backhanded blow to Manon's face, for leaving a lead. And then a ring of fire around Manon's throat, slamming her into the wood, as Aelin made her swear the information was correct. Rowan had dryly reminded Aelin that Manon was responsible for Elide's escape and rescue, too. Aelin had merely said if Manon hadn't been, the fire would already be down her throat. And that was that. Aelin, from the fervor with which she sparred with Rowan across the deck, was still pissed. The witch, from the snarling and scent in her cabin, was still pissed. Adian was more than ready to get to the Stone Marshes, even if what awaited them there might not be so pleasant. 3 more days lay between them and the eastern coast. And then they'd all see how much Rolf's alliance was worth, if the man could be trusted.
"You can't avoid him forever, you know," Lysandra said,
drawing his attention to the other reason he needed to get off this ship. His father sat near where Abraxos had curled along the prow, guarding and observing the Wyvern, learning how to kill them, where to strike. No matter that the Wyvern was little more than an oversized hound, docile enough that they hadn't bothered to chain him. They'd had none big enough anyway, and the beast would likely refuse to leave this ship until Manon did. Abraxos only moved to hunt for fish or larger game, Lysandra escorting him in sea dragon form beneath the waves. And when the beast was sprawled on the deck, the lion kept him company. Adian had barely spoken to Gavriel since Skull's Bay.
"I'm not avoiding him," Adian said.
"I just have no interest in talking to him." Lysandra flipped her wet hair over a shoulder, frowning at the damp splotches on her white shirt.
"I, for one, would like to hear the story of how he crossed paths with your mother. He's kind, for one of Maeve's cadre. Better than Fenris."
Indeed, Fenris made Adian want to shatter things. That laughing face, the swaggering dark arrogance. It was another mirror, he realized. But one who tracked Aelin everywhere like some dog. Or wolf, he supposed. Adian hadn't pitted himself against the male in the sparring ring, but he'd carefully watched Fenris take on Rowan and Gavriel, both of whom had trained the male. Fenris fought as he'd expected a warrior with centuries of training by 2 lethal killers to fight. But he had not glimpsed another whisper of the magic that allowed Fenris to leap between places, as if walking through some invisible doorway. As if his thoughts summoned the immortal warrior, Fenris swaggered out from the shadows below deck and smirked at them all before taking up his sentry position near the foremast. They were all on a schedule of watches and patrols, Lysandra and Rowan usually tasked with flying far out of sight to survey behind and ahead, or communicate with the 2 escort ships. Adian hadn't dared tell the shifter that he often counted the minutes until she returned, that his chest always felt unbearably tight, until he spotted whatever winged or finned form she wore returning to them. Like his cousin, he had no doubt the shifter wouldn't take well to his fussing.
Lysandra was carefully watching Aelin and Rowan, their blades like quicksilver, as they met each other blow for blow.
"You've been doing well with your lessons," Adian told the shifter.
Lysandra's green eyes crinkled. They'd all been taking turns walking the shifter through handling various weapons and hand-to-hand combat. Lysandra knew some from her time with Aerobin. He'd taught her as a way of ensuring the survival of his investment, she'd told him. But she wanted to know more, how to kill men in a myriad of ways. It shouldn't have thrilled him as much as it had. Not when she'd laughed off the claim Adian had made on the beach that day in Skull's Bay. She hadn't mentioned it again. He hadn't been stupid enough to, either. Adian trailed Lysandra, unable to help it, as she drifted toward where the Queen and Prince sparred, Dorian scooting over on the steps to silently offer her a space. Adian marked the gesture and the King's respect, shoving aside his own warring feelings about it as he lingered above them, and focused on his cousin and Rowan. But they'd worked themselves into an impasse, enough so that Rowan called it off and sheathed his sword, then flicked Aelin's nose when she looked pissy at not winning. Adian laughed under his breath, glancing to the shifter, as the Queen and Prince strode for the water jug and glasses against the stair railing and helped themselves. He was about to offer Lysandra a final round in the ring before the sun set, when Dorian braced his arms on his knees and said to Aelin through the stair railing,
"I don't think she'll do anything if we let her out."
Aelin took a dainty sip of her water, still breathing hard. "Did you arrive at that conclusion before, during, or after you visited her in the middle of the night?" Oh gods, it was going to be that sort of conversation. Dorian gave a half smile.
"You have a preference for immortal warriors. Why can't I?"
It was the faint click of her glass on the small table that made Adian brace himself, really start calculating the layout of the various decks. Fenris still monitored them from the foremast. Lysandra remained on Dorian's other side. He supposed that, standing above Dorian on the stairs and Aelin beside them, he'd be right in the middle. Exactly where he'd sworn not to be. Rowan, on the other side of Aelin, said to Dorian,
"Is there a reason, Majesty, that you believe the witch should be free?"
Aelin shot him a look of pure flame.
"Good.
Let the prince deal with her wrath. Even days after the claiming that had left everyone pretending they didn't notice the two puncture wounds on Rowan's neck, or the delicate, vicious scratches over his shoulders, the Fey Prince still looked like a male who had barely survived a storm and had enjoyed every wild second of it. Not to mention the twin wounds on Aelin's neck this morning. He'd almost begged her to find a scarf.
"Why don't we lock one of you in a room?"
Dorian pointed with his chin at the Fey warriors across the deck, at Lysandra to his right.
"And see how well you fare after so much time."
Aelin said, "Every inch of her has been designed to ensnare men, to make them think she's harmless."
"Trust me, Manon Blackbeak is anything but harmless."
Aelin charged on. "She and her kind are killers. They are raised without conscience. Regardless of what her grandmother did to her, she will always be that way. I will not endanger the lives of the people on this ship so you can sleep better at night." Her eyes shone with the unspoken jab. They all shifted, and Adian was about to ask Lysandra to spar, conversation closed, when Dorian said a bit too quietly,
"I am king, you know."
Turquoise and gold eyes snapped to Dorian. Adian could almost see the words Aelin fought to think through, her temper begging her to shut down the challenge. With a few choice sentences,
She could fillet his spirit like a fish, further shredding the scraps of the man who remained after the Volg Prince had violated him. And in doing so, lose a strong ally she'd need not just in this war, but if they survived it. And those eyes softened a bit. A friend. She'd lose that, too. Aelin rubbed at the scars on her wrists, stark in the golden light of the setting sun. Ones that made Adian sick to look at. She said to Dorian after a moment, "Controlled movements. If she leaves the room, she stays under guard, one of the Fae at any given time, plus one of us. Shackles on her wrists, not feet. No chains for the room, but a guard outside the door." Adian caught the thumb Rowan brushed over one of those scars on her wrist. Dorian just said, "Fine." Adian debated telling the king that a compromise from Aelin should be outright celebrated. Aelin's voice dropped to that lethal purr. "After you finished flirting with her that day in Oakwald, she and her coven tried to kill me." "You provoked her," Dorian countered, "and I sit here today because of what she risked when she came to Rifthold twice." Aelin wiped the sweat from her brow. "She has her own reasons, and I highly doubt it was because she, in her 100 years of killing, decided your pretty face would turn her good." "Yours turned Rowan from 3 centuries of a blood oath." It was Adian's father who said calmly, as he left his perch near Abraxos on the prow to approach them,
"I'd suggest, Majesty, that you pick another argument."
Indeed, Adian's every instinct came to attention at the frozen anger now limning the prince's every muscle. Dorian noticed it too, and said perhaps a bit guiltily,
"I meant no offense, Rowan."
Gavriel angled his head, golden hair sliding over a broad shoulder, and said with a ghost of a smile,
"Don't worry, Majesty. Fenris has given Whitethorn enough shit for it to last him another 3 centuries.
Adian blinked at the humor, the hint of a smile. But Aelin saved him the effort of deciding whether or not to answer that smile by saying to Dorian, "Well, let's see if the wing leader would like to take a turn about the deck before dinner." Dorian was right to look wary, Adian decided, but Aelin was already heading for the opposite side of the deck. Fenris peeling off from his post by the foremast, that edged bitter gaze sliding over them all while they passed. But Fenris would follow, no doubt. Like hell would they unleash the witch without all of them there. Even the cadre seemed to understand that. So Adian trailed after his queen into the dimness of the ship, night setting in above them, and prayed Aelin and Manon weren't about to rip the boat to shreds. "Climbing into bed with a witch," Aelin ground her teeth as she headed for Manon's room. Dorian had once been notorious when it came to women. But this... Aelin snorted, wishing Kaol were present, if only to see the look on his face. Even if it eased something tight in her chest to know Kaol and Felique were in the south, perhaps raising an army to cross the narrow sea and march northward, if they were all lucky. If. Aelin hated that word. But her friendship with Dorian was precarious enough. She'd yielded to his request, partially out of some scrap of kindness, but mostly because she knew there was more Manon had to tell them about Morath. About Erewhon. Lots more. And she doubted the witch would be forthcoming, especially when Aelin had lost her temper just a little bit this morning. And maybe it made her a conniving, hideous person for using Dorian's interest as a veil to butter up the witch, But it was war.